Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up! I just whipped your ass. You take it all away. I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out. The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host Dan in San Antonio, and I'm joined by the leader of the Popper Posse. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. Good to hear you.
Cool. Our other co-host should be on the line very soon. He's just running a little late, but
that's right.
It's just typical, unprofessional. But, Craig, you had the week off. How was your week off?
Oh, I was fine. I had a last-minute dinner date. I had some some people coming to the house to, basically my wife threw a dinner party and asked me to switch the show around and move the show. And then I informed her we had a guest, and that was impossible. So, anyway, that's what happened.
Well, let's be honest, these were your wife's friends, and you were, like, totally miserable the whole night because you couldn't stand them, right?
Yeah, see, that's not fair, because it wasn't the whole night.
Okay, cool. And you also had a big announcement yesterday or the day before, so I'll go ahead and let you repeat that announcement on here.
Oh, about the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl? Oh, wait, that was something completely different.
Now, everybody knows about that. That's not like big news to me. I mean, that's not big news to me. I mean, it's cool you guys have one championship, but my team has four championships.
Go.
So, you know, you guys got to win a few more to catch up.
What's the football team in San Antonio again?
Well, we don't have a football team, but our basketball team. You have a basketball team, by the way, Craig? Our basketball team has won four titles.
Yeah,
I think you guys had a chance 1 year. I think you had a chance 1 year, but I think you blew it and you won chance. And now you don't even have a team.
Well, we had one in 79, actually.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I was 7 years old.
Was that Jack Sigma? Was that like Jack Sigma was on the team? Or is that like even before then?
That was before then.
I'm even thinking the wrong team. I don't think Jack Sigma was on the team.
Yeah. Jack Sigma was on the Sonics. I actually got to meet him a couple of times when I was a young boy. But yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Craig,
yes.
I do have to call our guest, and you don't have the chair to talk to. So, are you going to be able to hang? You know, while I take the call. Are you prepared?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and make my announcement once you give the phone call.
Okay. Now, do you have an introduction for this person, by the way?
Yes, sir. Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of stalling because I'm having trouble finding the number, but I just found it. So have at it, Craig.
Excuse me.
That's a great way to start.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of sick today, so I will do my best to not cough directly into my phone. Okay, apparently Ed's calling the our guest tonight. Yes, I have been asked to be part of the Brian and Vinny show every Tuesday night on Brian's Figure Four news site, F4WOnline.com, and I will be. It will be the Brian, Vinny, and Craig show every Tuesday night, starting in a couple weeks when Brian gets back from his little vacation. Something that we've been kicking around for a while, and been on a few times over the last few weeks. And anyway, it's gone very well, and I want to thank everybody that sent in any kind of positive feedback. It means the world to me. It's very humbling to know that I put a smile on somebody's face. And it's something that I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be in radio. And this might be a shot of some kind. But again, I'm just very happy. And I'm not going to quit this show for now. And we'll see where things take us. I'm hoping we can do something with this show in a bigger faction very soon. We'll see where that goes. And Brian,
sorry to interrupt you, Craig, but could you introduce our guest, please?
I would be more than happy to. Our guest tonight started wrestling at the age of 16 and went on to form one of the greatest tag teams, the Fantastics. In the mid-80s, he and Tommy Rogers tore up the tag team division with unforgettable feuds with the Midnight Express and the Sheepherders and cemented him as one of wrestling's true legends. Please welcome to the show, Bobby Fulton.
Hey, thank you very much. Those were some very kind words by you fellows. You know, as you said, I started wrestling at the age of 16. It was a dream of mine from the time I could remember walking. If people asked me what I wanted to do, it was to become a professional wrestler, and I'm thankful that one day I was able to do that, get a chance to live a dream, and not only wrestle, like you said, the Midnight Express and the Four Horsemen back in the day, Tall and Iron, some of the greatest tag teams in professional wrestling during the 80s. It seemed like the 80s was a great time for tag team wrestling. It seems like now their focus is not on it, but back in the 80s, it sure was great to be part of a tag team. I had one of the greatest partners in the world, Tommy Rogers, and we had the opportunity to wrestle some of the greatest teams. You're exactly right.
Now, Bobby, you mentioned you started at the age of 16. How hard was it at that age, was it to get people, the promoters or other wrestlers, to, like, help train you and because I would imagine they'd be like, you know, hey, kid, go back to school. I mean, was it difficult to get them to help train you and get started so early? Because that is very early, to, you know, a career in wrestling.
Well, what actually happened was I'm from Chillicothe, Ohio, and there was a promoter. Back then, Ohio was a great back in the 50s and 60s, wrestling was really big in Ohio. It was a place that was doing great business. As a matter of fact, a fellow by the name of Lord James Blears later told me that in 1949, some of the top wrestlers in Ohio were making $1,500 a week. And Ronnie Garvin and Bronco Lubitsch, some of these are real old names, but people could look for them on the Internet and find them. But the man with the hands of stone, Rugged Ronnie Garvin, told me that there was a waiting list for people to be booked on the Ohio wrestling events. And back then, there was no independence, so to speak. Either you were a part of a organization, which back then, the National Wrestling Alliance pretty much dominated the entire United States, except for a little bit later on, the AWA started. And then, of course, Vince McMahon Sr. had part of the Northeast and eventually going over to Pennsylvania. But I wrestled for some – I'd started sitting the ring up for a guy by the name of Hank Best, who had a little wrestling company. And like I said, it was considered to be outlaw, but what they would do is they would run wrestling events throughout Southern Ohio. And as a matter of fact, some of the wrestlers they had was Leon Grand. They would put they would have Buddy Rogers on the card sometimes, the original Sheik back in the 50s and the 60s, and people like that. But when I started setting the ring up for them was about 1971. I was 11 years old. Back then, they wouldn't. If you wasn't a wrestler, you wasn't allowed in the dressing room. You weren't privileged to any knowledge about the wrestling business. The wrestlers didn't speak out of school, so to speak, meaning that it was the cave, as people call it, the kayfabe era, and everybody took care of the wrestling business. And if a wrestler didn't take care of the wrestling business, then the other wrestlers would take care of that particular person. But I would get to the arena and set the ring up, and then I'd get a chance to roll around. And, fellas, I'm telling you, it was unbelievable, that feeling to set that wrestling ring up and then get in there before the people got in there and roll around for 20 minutes or so. And so finally I was 15, 16 years old. I wanted to wrestle. That group would not break me in the wrestling business. As a matter of fact, they really took care of it. But what happened was a guy by the name of Ken Jugan out of Pennsylvania, who later became Zoltan the Great, was an independent wrestler and did a great job in his own right. They were having wrestling in West Virginia. So I contacted him and told him that I really wanted to be a wrestler. And the group there locally in Ohio gave me a catalog where to order my wrestling stuff at. But like I said, they wouldn't break me in. And I went down to West Virginia in my first match at 16 years old. My dad, we drove 175 miles down to Clarksburg, West Virginia. I wrestled a guy named Joseph Shedlock, who was called Mad Dog Michaels. It was his first match also. I remember telling my dad, I said, Dad, if wrestling is on the up and up, and if it's not on the up and up and not legitimate, then I'm not going to wrestle. And he said, son, that would be more reason to wrestle. That way you wouldn't get hurt as often. But then this fellow went out and wrestled. His first when I got there, the guy with the ring didn't want me wrestling. He said, he's 16 years old. He said, he's going to get hurt in my ring. I'm going to get in trouble. I said, sir, I'll soon be 17. Well, it just so happened that someone didn't show up. So I went out there and wrestled that guy. And all of a sudden, about 3 minutes in the match, of course, it seemed like 30 minutes, the dressing room emptied. They came and pulled us apart. And later I found out they thought we was going to kill each other. I was black and blue the next day from head to toe. I got paid a whole $5, and I was sitting on top of the world. I had my first professional wrestling match without any really training whatsoever, except for when I got in the ring and rolled around or wrestled in a little old cabin that we had where the floor gave and everything. So in 1977, there in June, in Clarksburg, West Virginia, to Nathan Goff Armory, I got a chance to have my first match and wrestle that match in West Virginia for the first time.
Now you mentioned you talked to your dad saying that you hope that wrestling was on the up and up. When did you actually become smart to the business, as I guess some
people say? Well, the thing of it was, and I still do this today, I can work out with people. Like, I just did a seminar not long ago, and I know people know what wrestling's all about, but I tell them, you see, you can teach people the word. A lot of people don't use the term professional wrestlers anymore. The wrestlers today call themselves workers. Well, we're professional wrestlers. But what happened was, at first, I wasn't smart to anything. I wasn't smart to any lingo. I wasn't smart to any of the stuff. I went in there and in a working way had a wrestling match. I didn't know nothing about any blades or anything. I went and I seen somebody busted open. My eyes was big as Coke bottles. I mean, you know, looking like, my goodness. And I mean, I kind of figured it out. I mean, I kind of thought it was, but I wasn't for sure. But I did know for certain that it was my dream to become a professional wrestler. And when I didn't have, as a matter of fact, I went to a small high school in Ross County in Chillicothe, and it was Southeastern High School in Richmonddale. They had just started a football program. They'd always had a basketball program. All those country boys played basketball. They just started a football program, but see, I started wrestling at 16. And although I was getting paid money, I couldn't play on the football team anymore because back then there was a law. If you received any money for any type of sport or any type of thing like that, then you couldn't participate in the football program. And they did not have any wrestling program. As a matter of fact, they started that after I think I graduated. So I didn't have any amateur wrestling experience, but I just was determined, pretty raw bone, halfway strong young guy, and just was ready to go for with whatever it took. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there was nobody that pulled me aside to smarten me up. As I was saying, the guys I worked for setting the ring up, they never spoke. They never talked. We couldn't go in the dressing room. The dressing room doors always had, wherever we was at, a piece of paper that said professional wrestlers only. And I'll never forget that. And nobody was allowed to go in. And they wouldn't talk about the wrestling business. They took care of it because most of those guys, as a matter of fact, Hank Best told me that he drove up to Buddy Rogers and them, and they trained up in Columbus. You all have heard of Buddy Rogers, haven't you? The Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers from the...
The original Nature Boy.
The original. Well, he was based out of Columbus for years. And he told me, he said, back then they didn't have power steering in those 56 Chevys, I think it was. And he said they stretched him so bad he couldn't even hardly steer the car back home to Chillicothe. And that's how they broke people in the business. You had to be tough, and then you were smartened up later. Not that your guts was spilled prior to the fact. And like I said, I was working and not even realizing what I was doing, you know, when I went out there in that match.
Mm-hmm. Now, very early on, you were part of a tag team before the Fantastics. You were a tag team with Eric Embry. And what could you tell us about that? Because just shortly after that, I got to see both of you guys in Southwest.
Right. Well, what happened was, Eric Embry, I was living in Ohio, and at the time I was 16, just to go back a little bit, I had Flying Fred Curry and Wild Bull Curry, who were two big names in Ohio, had started a wrestling company out of Columbus, Ohio. And they had called my friend and asked about if they knew anywhere they could rent a ring for a show. And we tried to talk the guy that we Hank Best in to rent his ring, but, you know, even then, they were real reluctant to work with other people. So we went to the show in Circleville, and I remember walking into the dressing room. And, you know, I just wrestled on a small level at that point with guys. And the guys in West Virginia, don't get me wrong, they were the guys that were putting guys over on New York TV, the WWF television. So these guys that I was with in West Virginia had some television experience. Of course, on the losing end, back then they used enhancement talent, which I think is a thing of the past now, you know, as far as that goes. And these guys were enhancement guys, but they could get in the ring and give a great match. But I started wrestling with Flying Fred Curry and Wild Bull Curry. And when I did that, I went to Kentucky one time, a couple times to Georgetown. And Flying Fred Curry, I was Flying Fred Curry's traveling opponent. As a matter of fact, when I was 18, and there's tapes out there of it, I went to Hamburg and Reading, Pennsylvania, and done the WWF TV tapings. And I noticed the guy said on the tape, I don't think this is their Bobby Fulton later, but it is. And I heard Bruno and Vince McMahon talking about me, but I wrestled Pat Patterson, Steve Travis, Flying Fred Curry, and I went there a few times. Beginning to Eric Embry, I met him first in Georgetown, Kentucky. He was wrestling as Don Starr. And Eric Embry was a tremendous wrestling talent. And keep in mind, when I first started, wrestlers wasn't bodybuilders. They were wrestlers. And they, you know, they were in good shape, don't get me wrong, but none of them was great big muscle-bound guys. I mean, you know, back then they had Mighty Igor, who was a muscular guy, but he was thick. He wasn't cut. And things like that. So what happened was me and Eric Embry started wrestling in Georgetown, and then we went to Nick Gullis' territory in Tennessee to become a tag team. And Nick Gullis, when he seen us, he said, boys, they like brother tag teams here. You guys are going to be Bob and Dom and the Fulton brothers. And that's what we became. We started wrestling there in Tennessee against some of the tag teams and stuff like that. And it was tough because we wasn't making very much to Lee. That I remember he said, fit, so they called the car on there where everybody bought their Ohio and ordered our stuff. And the first week or two, we owed Nick Gullis money. So, I mean, it was tough to make it, you know. But Nick Gullis was a big NWA guy. Have you guys heard the name Nick Gullis?
Yes, sir. Yes, he was a pretty big promoter for quite a while.
Yeah, he had a lot of Tennessee. He not only had Tennessee, but he had Birmingham, Alabama, and he was a big deal. Yeah, Nick Gullis was a very big promoter back in the day, as a matter of fact, and so we wrestled for him. And as a matter of fact, after me and Eric Embry wrestled for Nick Gullis, we ended up going to Louisiana to wrestling for Bill Watts for just a little while, but it didn't last long. We went there, but Eric Embry's a heck of a wrestler. Like I said, I've been blessed. You know, I was talking about Tommy Rogers. We became tag team partners, later on at the Fantastics, as you said, and acquired a lot of fame and fortune and everything. But Eric Embry, in his own right, became a wrestling star, helped at Texas territory. As a matter of fact, you said you first ran into us in San Antonio. We started a program there and started wrestling each other. And as a matter of fact, we had the first scaffold match in Texas there at the Hemisphere Arena in San Antonio years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with that match or not.
To be honest with you, I didn't realize that that was you until I kind of checked your Wikipedia, and then I always remember, it came back to me. It's like, because I remember when they brought you in, you know, you were really young, good-looking baby
right.
face. And you wrestled, I think, Adrian Street also. And, I remember you. I never really realized it was you until just recently.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, what happened was, when I left San Antonio, that's when I went to Louisiana to become one half of the Fantastics. And I tell a lot of people that while Tommy Rogers and I was a great tag team, the first Fantastics put together was Terry Taylor when we had a short run in Georgia in 1983. So actually, and a lot of people don't realize that, and you all remember who Terry Taylor is, right? He wrestled on top in a lot of the territories. As a matter of fact, I think he might still be involved behind the scenes in wrestling. And he was a great wrestler, and everything. But, yeah, I love San Antonio. That was a great thing about it, was you had a chance to wrestle in different companies and different territories and things like that. And San Antonio, I loved wrestling there. They have a lot of great fans, and we got a chance to travel all over Texas and everything. And we just had I had a ball in San Antonio. I loved it.
We actually just had Rudy Boy Gonzalez on the show last week, and he told the story on the show about how he was the timekeeper, and that just somebody didn't show up, and Alvarez went and grabbed him, took him to the back, and he didn't have any gear. And Jonathan Boyd's like, somebody give him gear, and you lend him some extra wrestling trunks and help him out.
Right, right, right. Did I lose you?
No, we're here.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Hey, what I was getting ready to say, Rudy's a good friend of mine, and like I said, a lot of times in wrestling we would, things would happen like that. It's like one night when I was like 15 in a snowstorm, they almost made me the referee, although I wasn't smart to the wrestling business. They were going to make me be the referee, so a lot of times that's how guys got their break into the business, like Rudy Gonzalez with the same thing. And, you know, Jonathan Boyd, who was part of the Sheepherders, who prior to that was one of the Royal Kangaroos with Norman Frederick Charles III, but Jonathan Boyd had a great mind for the wrestling business, that's for sure. And what a vicious wrestler he was, and a great manager there in San Antonio. They had tons of heat on them there, the Sheepherders did. You remember?
Yeah, they had a great run. Sadly, like Southwest seemed to be like one of the first territories that kind of went away. But before it did, I mean, I like to say it was like the precursor to ECW because it was like
all guts.
You know, everybody, you had like, everybody looked like a Bill the Butcher or Bruiser Brody as far as like the forehead.
Yep.
You know, and just Matty
I remember wrestling one night in Odessa, Texas, at the Ector County, I think they call it Coliseum. And I was watching Joe LaDuke and Bruiser Brody, and Bruiser Brody hit Joe LaDuke with a chair. And I'm telling you, you know, back then they had the ring lights over the dark arena, and I could see the blood just go almost clear up to the ring lights out of Joe LaDuke's head. I mean, you're right, it was a blood and guts territory. The people bought it, and as a matter of fact, the night we had the scaffold match, the Von Erichs were at the Joe and Harry Freeman Coliseum in North San Antonio, and we were opposition to them the same night. And I think Joe Blanchard had told Luke Williams, who is one of the sheepers and was the booker, and I think Jonathan Boyd Elton Law said, if we're able to beat them, then I'm going to do this or do that or whatever. And I think we beat the great Von Erichs that night, outdrawing them. You know, and we only had Spanish television where they had English television, but still we were able to. We had a great following there, a lot of great wrestlers. Like you said, Al Perez was there. As far as Scott Casey was there, as far as Babyfaces and the Hills and Bobby Jaggers, and they had Keller Brooks there, and Mil Mascaras would come and work, and Carlos Colon. As a matter of fact, Carlos Colon seen that scaffold match. And one thing, and I even last week had thought about Eric Emery up on that scaffold, because he got to the edge of it, and it would kind of rock a little bit, fellas. And I remember he would bend his back over, and even right now it makes me in my insides, fear comes over me, because if he would have just fell, it would have been all over for him, because he just didn't do that over the ring. He did it at the edge of the scaffold where it would have been out where the crowd was. And I mean, it was just unbelievable. I couldn't do it. As a matter of fact, Bobby Jaggers seen our scaffold match, and the late Bobby Jaggers, he said, man, you guys should be able to do a lot more than that up there. So we went to Corpus Christi and did the scaffold match. And before the crowd got in, he climbed up there. Well, they started letting the public in. Bobby got down on his knees and crawled across it. He couldn't even stand up and walk across it with himself up there, let alone with someone else shaking it. But San Antonio was a great territory. I got a chance, really, I was blessed to go into places. And even before I was in San Antonio, it's a little-known fact, I wrestled for the Hearts in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And Eric Embry was up there, too. Me and him worked a lot of places together. Only one place is brothers, but we wrestled up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. As a matter of fact, Owen Hart was just a little boy running around in the dressing room. And Dynamite Kid was a great athlete, one of the greatest wrestlers that I've ever seen in my life wrestled, you know, back then. It was magical. Lynn Denton and David Sierra, who was David Patterson, and Bobby Bass, no class Bobby Bass, wrestled up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, the Cuban Assassin. So I got a chance before they all, like you said, San Antonio had went out of business, and I got a chance to wrestle in some of the last of the great territories, I guess.
Did you get a chance to train in the dungeon?
No, I wouldn't go there. I didn't do great in school, but I was smart enough to stay out of that place.
That's right. That's right.
That's for sure. I had heard, and while I was there, a newspaper reporter got his arm broke by Stu, and it was in the paper. And the paper said, if the 62 or 63-year-old promoter broke my arm, imagine what one of them wrestlers would do to me. And that's the way it was, you know. Stu said, let me tell you, if I did that to you, what would some of these wrestlers be able to do to you, you know? And I never went down. I never went to no dungeon.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Jerry Morrow?
No, I didn't, but I heard of Jerry Morrow, and I heard a lot of good things about him. People would talk, but I never did get a chance. I'd seen him. He also wrestled as Edward Ether or something, didn't he?
That's right. Yes, sir.
And I got a chance to do a lot of great things in wrestling, but I'm a big fan of wrestling too. And you see, when I was a young boy, being that I'm 53, we didn't have the internet, but we had the wrestling magazines that would come out. Mm-hmm. And I would go to the drugstore every month, and I could just memorize those. As a matter of fact, because of my love of wrestling, it helped me as far as geography, because I knew where states were and countries were and stuff because of the wrestling, you know.
Right.
And I'd just read them wrestling magazines left and right. Tom Burke, who's a great historian, he helped with the Ring magazine. It was Nat LaBeouf. I can't even say his name, but also George Napolitano was with the National Magazine. Bill Apter was with the National Magazine. And I lived to get those magazines. They were our internet back then. And then we had a chance to join fan clubs. And before I went to Nick Gullis' territory, we used to get the Slamogram from Scott Teal up in Ohio. And we'd read that thing. And, I mean, you know, back then there was regional fan clubs. And Ken Jugan, as a matter of fact, had one. And that's how we got our education, not knowing the inside of wrestling, but learning about the wrestlers. Like I said, Jerry Morrow, Edward Ether, I can't say that name right, but I never got a chance. Going back to that, I never got a chance to meet that gentleman.
Just curious.
Now, before we get to the fantastic tag team, you brought up the team with Taylor, and I believe you guys were the Fantastic Ones.
Yes, sir. We sure was. It was short-lived.
Yeah, how did y'all come about tag teaming?
Well,
and just any thoughts about that, the message you had at the time?
Well, see, in that particular time, and I think it was 1983 or 82, there was still territory. So say, for example, if something was hot in one territory, another promoter would hear about it, and they would try to emulate that. Well, what happened was we were all wrestling for Jerry Jarrett, and Bill Dundee was the booker. Superstar Bill Dundee was like a father to me and helped me so much throughout my wrestling. But what happened was we were going to work in the Georgia territory because Georgia Championship Wrestling, Jim Barnett, Ole Anderson, and them was going to Ohio and Michigan. That was back in the days of the early Road Warriors, who was later the Legion of Doom, and Wildfire Tommy Rich, and all these guys were wrestling, Gene and Ole Anderson, them. But we went down there to work, and because of the Fabulous Ones fame in Tennessee, Jerry Jarrett, who created the Fabulous Ones, did the same thing with us, and me and Terry Taylor, we did the exact same videos at the exact same place, wearing the exact same costumes. So we went out. It wasn't that we stole their, gimmick. It was given to us because it was like this in wrestling. It's mind over matter. If you don't mind, you won't matter. If they tell you to do something, then it's up to you to do it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So Terry Taylor and I went to Georgia to become the Fantastic Ones for the first time. And he was a great, great, great wrestler. Could go in there and get the job done. Like I said, we worked against Jim Cornette. It wasn't his first managerial job, but he went to Georgia with us. There was probably 20-some guys out of Tennessee, and then they got some other guys to fill out the roster that went to Georgia to wrestle at that time. Adrian Street was one of them. As a matter of fact, they went nuts when Adrian Street came out, Ole Anderson did, and did his thing. He just could not believe that that was in a professional wrestling ring. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, he was like way ahead of his time, you know.
Yeah, when Adrian Street first came to Memphis Wrestling, Memphis Wrestling was live, and he just came from England, and he was dressed like that, right? And all of a sudden, he gets in the ring wrestling a guy by the name of Ira Reese, who was a black guy. Well, he goes skipping around the ring, flipping the bird. Now, this is going out live to every home, and wrestling in Memphis was one of the hottest shows. I mean, everybody watched it. I don't know what the rating was or know about ratings, but it was big time. Well, what happened was all of a sudden, not only did he do that, but he jumped up on Ira Reese and gave him a big French kiss. And Ira Reese, he was a black guy. He sat down, ended up on his butt, and his eyes was great big. He was in shock, and of course, it caused a lot of trouble there on that Memphis television station live, because not only was he flipping everybody the bird, skipping around the ring dressed like a woman, you know, painted up, he kissed a black man.
Oh my.
On Memphis TV. But Adrian Street and Miss Linda were great people. They were in Georgia with us, so we had a crew. It only lasted a short time, and then we all ended up back in Tennessee. And then that's, of course, I went to San Antonio after that. That's when I went to San Antonio.
We were talking about earlier. I've seen, like, pictures of Adrian Street from not too long ago, and he still looks like he's in phenomenal shape. And I also hear, like he wasn't the biggest guy, but a lot of times he was probably the toughest guy in the dressing room.
Yeah, he was. And as a matter of fact, he stretched me a couple times, which was cool. And he'd only let me up when he wanted me to get up. I could only get up when he wanted me to. And as a matter of fact, his wife, Miss Linda, is not as tough as him, but just as tough. She stretched Jim Cornette in the dressing room, had him crying for his mama. But, I mean, she was a tough woman, too, and she'd get in fights, because back in those days, most of the wrestlers had to fight the crowd, and Miss Linda would knock people out. But Adrian Street, a couple of times, one time he busted a mirror over my head, and I'll never forget, and I thank the world of Adrian Street, and he taught me a lot. But one time he busted a mirror over my head, I was bleeding like a stuck hog in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And then another time in San Antonio, he stretched me. I had Sunshine at the ring with me, and Adrian Street was teaching me a lesson from another territory, you see. He never forgot. But also one time, we were wrestling for the Southwest Junior Heavyweight belt, right?
Yes, sir.
In the middle of the match, I remember he reached out and grabbed the belt off the table, and all of a sudden he was trying to shove it down in my mouth. And I caught it right when it was almost there, and I mean it was sideways. And I said, man, are you okay? He said, I just wanted to make sure you were. So I can laugh about it now, but it wouldn't have been funny to knock my teeth out. But like I said, I have all due respect for Adrian. He's a super tough guy, and I'm sure he could still, once you learn stuff like he learned on the shooting aspect and how to hook people and stuff like that, you never forget, you know. And conditioning is the main thing in life.
We just recently, our other co-host just got on the line, so I'd like to give him a chance to ask you a question.
Yes.
Couture, go ahead.
I was wondering, what was it like to work for Bill Watts? You know, he had a reputation as being, I guess, kind of a hard man to work for, but what was your opinion, Hogan?
He was a hard man to work for. Let me tell you something about Bill Watts. I worked for him a couple times. And Bill Watts, I respect him immensely. He could be like any type of employee. Buddy, he could get the best out of you. And by the time you were done, you were wrung out. There were so many times when we wrestled nine times a week in nine different cities, and we would drive 3,000, 3,500 miles a week, and it was just exhausting. I remember one time, we wrestled the sheep herders, and we wrestled in 6 weeks straight of barbed wire. And all over my place was blood and bloody gear, and it was just unbelievable. And then a couple times I got a staph infection and almost died because of it, you know. And I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, what's wrong with you? I said, I don't know. I thought I was dying, But Bill Watts was a great territory. He only had the best in wrestling talent. And as a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to go, I think, April the 4th. I can't remember when it is, or 3rd. I'm going to be a part of that Mid-South Legends there in New Orleans, Louisiana, that traditional championship wrestling is putting together, in which Bill Watts will be there. Jim Cornette, the Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express will be there. We're all going to gather there that WrestleMania weekend for for a great big Mid-South Legends fan fest, so to speak. So I'm so excited about that. And I seen Bill Watts a couple years ago, and I went up and shook his hand and everything. I have nothing but respect for him. As a matter of fact, I seen him one night in Shreveport, and I was telling a friend of mine here sitting by me now that I seen him take a guy in a hammerlock and twist his arm completely around until I heard it snapping in two, just to prove what wrestling was. Bill Watts got him in the ring and did that. He had sent Dr. Death Steve Williams in, and then when Steve didn't do enough to him, Bill Watts jumped in and finished the guy off. So Bill Watts was a great, he was over big time. You know, he wrestled in New York. A lot of people might not know that in the 60s, I think, in the 70s. And in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know, a lot of people don't realize that just because it was Louisiana, that there's not a big emphasis on it, or some of the other smaller territories, like I said, Memphis, Tennessee. In the 80s, Memphis, Tennessee, we had one of the greatest rosters in wrestling, I think. I mean, if you go back and look at them and everything. But Bill Watts was a hard man to work for, and the reason why I would say the word is driven would be a better word. And he could take guys that might have been mess-ups, you know what I'm saying, and he would get the best out of them. And I'm talking about like Jake Roberts and everybody, for that matter, Hacksaw Butch Reed, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I'm not saying they're mess-ups, but I'm just saying, hey, look, guys, imagine this. You take 24 guys, and you tell them, we're going to go from point A to point B. The hard thing is getting them all to show up there at a respectable time. Then to get them to do the wrestling now, two things I remember. One time I was wrestling Dr. Death Steve Williams, the late Dr. Death Steve Williams, who was a great football player at Oklahoma, not only a football player, but a great wrestler. I was wrestling him in Monroe, Louisiana, and I remember hearing him saying, he just tried to knock me down. Well, all of a sudden, man, I ran about a 70-yard dash right out of the ring, right back to the dressing room, and right on my heels was a 340-pound Dr. Death Steve Williams ready to kill me. You know what I'm saying. I just seen on YouTube the other day me and Tommy wrestling in a match against him and Ted DiBiase. They were – what great talent that was there in Louisiana. And because it's not a major city, it's not spotlighted like it should. If people would take time today to watch those matches, they would be amazed by – and I've seen the GWF recently on Classic Champions, Classic ESPN, and it just reminded me of how wrestling can really look instead of how it looks today, so cardboard and cookie cutter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Every guy don't have to look the same.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what makes it interesting is that people look different. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Wrestling for Bill Watts was great.
I was gonna say I've heard the story that when Bill put you and Tommy together that you two had never met before.
No, we had met in Tennessee. You see, we had met in Tennessee before, and what it was the Rock and Roll Express was in Louisiana, and they were leaving for 90 days to go back to Tennessee. And Tommy, I think, was wrestling on Georgia Championship Wrestling, and I was wrestling in San Antonio, and they wanted the team to come in and take the Rock and Roll's place for those 90 days. Well, we came in and did that and wrestled the Midnight Express, and then we went to Dallas, Texas after that. But I knew Tommy prior to Louisiana. I'd met him in Tennessee for a short time.
Okay. Craig, go ahead, Craig.
Oh, goodness. So many questions. You had, of course, you brushed on it just briefly. You had a huge feud with Sheepherders, and I live up here in Washington State, and I never got to see any of this stuff, but in the aftermags, I saw pictures of you in the barbed wire matches. Who came up with that idea? And please share the story of how it was presented to you.
Well, You know,
it wasn't the barbed wire. It was like a barbed wire cage. That's what was really like,
right.
Yeah,
crazy.
And I don't know if people know, there's a 2-pronged barbed wire and there's a 4-pronged barbed wire, which a 4-pronged barbed wire, when it grabs you, it just rolls into you. And I don't know who came up with it, actually, but I know we was in those matches. And, you know, when we got there and seen that barbed wire, and you got to think of the time, too. I mean, in the 80s. But like you said, the people was into the blood and guts. I remember growing up as a kid in Ohio and Michigan, where the original Sheik and them wrestled here. Man, if you didn't see blood at a wrestling event, you was mad. You know, you felt like you'd been ripped off. But
right.
when we wrestled the sheep herders down there, and our feud began at the first Crockett Cup that was in New Orleans at the Superdome, where the WrestleMania will be held this year. And we wrestled there, and we all went, the sheep herders went through a bunch of teams. We went through teams like the Fabulous Ones, the Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, and finally we were at the semifinals against the sheep herders, and it all broke loose, and there was blood flying, and that started the feud. Later on, we had those barbed wire matches. Like I said, I don't know how it came to pass. We also had New Zealand boot camp matches, but you see, Tommy Rogers and I, as you said, was a babyface tag team. We were a tag team put together to draw the women to the wrestling matches.
Right.
And so a lot of guys didn't like us because a lot of times we were still in their girlfriends at the wrestling matches and stuff like that. But what happened was when we got in the matches with the sheep herders and the blood started flying and the fist and blood started flying, the guys started liking us too. So it really helped us to get more accepted to a wider audience because of those blood baths, you know, mm-hmm. that we had and everything.
Couture, go ahead, Couture.
Yeah, I was just going to say about that Crockett Cup match. I was actually at that event live in the Superdome. That's still one of the best matches I've ever seen. I just...
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can I tell you something?
What now?
No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say this, that I was at a fan fest somewhere in Charlotte, and a guy came up to me, and I can't remember his name. I wish I remember. And he said he was at that event also. And he said he seen me standing there, and I'm only 5'9". I was 195 pounds, blonde-haired guy standing there. His name's Maynard or May or something like that. But he told me later, he said, I seen you, and I thought, my goodness, is this what I'm going to see tonight? And all of a sudden, he said, we went out there to that ring, and he said, I could not believe it. Because he grew up watching the big guys wrestle in New York. And he wasn't used to, see, I think there's like a northern style of wrestling, which is the northeast style, the bigger guys, and then the southern style is the smaller action-packed wrestling. But he paid me a compliment, and you just did too, and said it was one of the best matches of that card. And if we think about it, in the 1980s when it took place, not only was the greatest wrestlers there, from the United States, but from all over the world, from Japan, Tiger Mask was there, Giant Baba was there, people from Puerto Rico, the Road Warriors were there. As a matter of fact, they won the thing, I think, that year. And for you to pay me that compliment, thank you, sir. Thank you very much, because you know what? As a fan, that's why I did it, man. I loved it. And I wrestled whether I was hurt, whether I was sick. If I had to crawl to the ring, that's what I did. And I thank you for the compliment you just paid me, and I greatly appreciate it. And because of YouTube, before Vince McMahon takes all that stuff off YouTube, if he does, we're getting people to see our wrestling, and I see the comments of people saying, my goodness, this stuff holds up even better than what we're seeing today. And that was in the 80s. And, of course, I'm 53, and now I'm going to wrestle tomorrow night in Columbus, Ohio, and be a tag team partner with the Honky Tonk Man. But being 53, I'm not the man I was in the 1980s. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got wear and tear on me and this and that, but I still enjoy going out, seeing wrestlers, seeing old friends, and not only that, getting in the ring and wrestle and everything. So I appreciate the compliment, and you know, and I like wrestling just as much today as I liked it when I was 4 years old. You know, I'm still a big fan of it.
Yeah, I grew up in the Louisiana territory when I was younger, and so I got to see like a lot of that stuff live, and that's still some of the best stuff I've ever seen. I'm still all up today.
I know. If people would take it, just take time to look at it, but then they would see that, man, that was some great stuff. You're exactly right.
Now, speaking of your tag team partner, Tommy Rogers, how's he doing? I haven't seen too much and heard too much.
He lives in Hawaii, and he's doing pretty good. He's got new shoulders and new knees. And new hips, and I think he needs some new ankles. He's got a lot of wear and tear. Of course, all of us do, you know. But he's doing great. I stay in touch with him. We ended up being like brothers. We were like married for years, but we ended up being like brothers, you know, being in wrestling, especially in Louisiana, traveling like we did and everything.
Craig, go ahead, Craig.
You mentioned that you still watch wrestling. Who's really impressing you nowadays?
Well, Daniel Bryan. I told my kids, I said, this guy Daniel Bryan, even a couple of years ago, I seen him on a Ring of Honor wrestling show. I said, that guy's great right there. I said, he is really super good, and he's impressive. A lot of them are impressive, you know, as far as that goes. I don't know, you know, all, like I said, I can't name them all, but there's a lot of guys
sure.
that do a lot of the pressure stuff, and I'm sorry for the beeping. There's someone trying to contact me, so please bear with me while
no
I'm
worries.
Doing that. But like I said, Daniel Bryan, there's a lot of great wrestlers. The thing that bothers me more than anything, though, is that, the rush during television, as far as that goes, so...
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's a lot of great wrestlers out there today. But Daniel Bryan, I think, if not the best, I'll say he's the best. He's a fiery babyface. That's why the people
yes,
love
you.
Him. And see, the
yep.
one thing about wrestling is the playbook was made up years ago, and they're never going to be able to change that. And I understand Vince McMahon's going to try to make it where there's no heels anymore. But any international movie that you see, if it's any type of adventure type movie, it's a good guy and a bad guy. And you
right.
know who the
yep.
good guy and the bad guy is right off the bat.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, I'm going to say goodbye to hey, Steve, take care. God bless you, buddy. I'm telling my buddy goodbye. I'm getting ready to go down the road, and I want to talk.
Oh, we might have lost him. Bobby, are you there? And I'm going to have to call him back, so I'm going to probably have to disconnect. Let me see if I can get a call.
Okay.
You guys just talk for a minute.
Sure.
Hi, Craig.
Hey, man. How's it going?
I apologize for being late.
Oh, you got to apologize to me. I wasn't even here last week, so.
I had to go across town, and when you go across town, it's like you got to take a day off of work here in Dallas, so.
Mm-hmm.
I only got me a new dog today.
Oh, cool. Yeah, sorry about your pup. That
yeah.
sucks.
That's the worst.
Yeah, it's like losing a family member. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's worse. Yeah. Sometimes it's kind of worse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to hate a dog.
Yeah.
It's easy to hate a family member.
It's even worse. It's even worse when you're in the room when it happens. So I don't suggest that. No matter how much you
yeah.
like
it. Yeah, that's no good.
Metal butt cue.
Yeah, that's not good.
But like my pet owners, I went and got me a new one. So I gotta have somebody nipping at my heels and staring at me while I'm eating, you know, stuff like that. So I don't have that in my not complete.
That's good. Good.
So you were talking about the Super Bowl, I guess, So Seattle was in the Super Bowl. I don't follow football, so I don't know that.
Okay, yes. Guys, I got Bobby back on the line. Just technical difficulties, but we're good to go. Bobby, I wanted to bring up something. You mentioned, like, fiery babyface. And a lot of people, they talk about, like, when they talk about babyface tag teams, a lot of people will say that the Rock and Roll Express are the best tag team. Me and my co-host, Contreras, we always argue that, and we say the Fantastics were the best babyface tag team because both the guys could do the comeback. And it's like a truly an honor to talk to you because, you know, Fantastic's one of my favorite teams, and I got to see a lot of you in when you were in World Class. You guys would come to San Antonio a lot. And what were your thoughts about working the Midnight Express and working the Dallas territory, and what was Fritz Von Erich and the Von Erichs like?
It was great. Dallas was a great territory when we went over there. When Tommy and I first went there, we wrestled Wild Bill and Scott Hulk Irwin, the late Scott Irwin, who was also the Super Destroyer in some of the territories, and we beat them for the belts right off the bat. We wrestled against the Midnight Express there, and I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen to Jim Cornette, and I did an interview just about a week ago, and he talked about the comparison of the Rock and Roll Express and the Fantastics, and you'll have to go and just listen to it. I'm not going to say much about it. But just listen to it sometime, and I think it's jimcornette.com, and he'll tell you about the Fantastics. As a matter of fact, I won't say no more. I'll let him do his talking. And as a matter of fact, I was greatly appreciative of the great and kind things that he said. But Jim Cornette was a wimp at the beginning, and when we got to Dallas, he was the biggest wimp. And the people in Dallas realized that Jim Cornette was a wimp, because he had his mama's money, and he had two thugs, Beautiful Bobby and Loverboy Dennis, was his henchmen. And Jim Cornette, with that tennis racket, did everything he could to be what he wasn't, and that was a great athlete. He wanted to probably be in wrestling, but you see, Jim Cornette's physical attributes wasn't that of a professional wrestler. But don't get me wrong, his mouth could often write checks that his tag team's tail couldn't cash. And Jim Cornette was a very hated man, not only in Texas, but up here. He, as a matter of fact, on nationwide television, called my mother a lot of horrible names, my late mother who had just passed away. But Jim Cornette, and we had a big feud with him, and it went all over, like you said, World Class, and later on, of course, with the NWA. But as concerning the Von Erichs, what a great family, of course, with a lot of tragedy. I remember Mike Von Erich. As a matter of fact, we were in a high school gym, because back in those days, we did a lot of fundraisers for high schools and local events. And oftentimes, if the Lions Club brought us to town, then they would have to rent the high school gym to have the wrestling event there. Well, I'll never forget, there was like a roll of tape laying there, and Mike Von Erich said, I couldn't pick that roll of tape up. That'd be like stealing. And then a couple of days later, he took his own life. And, I mean, I just think about that. His brother Chris and Carrie, of course, and they were really super nice people. And as a matter of fact, Kevin Von Erich the same way. They were gentlemen. And I don't understand for the life of me the pain that they went through, but it must have been for the tragic ending. And I feel so sorry for Kevin, because I read in a paper that he had been in an interview, and he said one day he was a brother of four or five people. And, of course, David Von Erich, who a lot of people says was one of the greatest wrestlers of the Von Erich family. But, back then, Kerry would have been bigger than Hulk Hogan, perhaps. And I remember we went from Dallas, Texas, to wrestle in Lynn, Massachusetts, and sold the arena out. Not only that, we went to Israel. And as a matter of fact, when the Von Erichs went to Israel, there was 10,000-15,000 people waiting for them. I mean, it was a big deal. They were nationwide. A lot of people don't realize it. And through what, I don't know what. But we would go to Chicago, even when I was in WCW or NWA, and people would know me and Tommy before they knew the rest of the guys from world-class television. There was a legitimacy there for some reason, and I don't know what it was. And keep in mind, when we were in world-class, of course, the Freebirds have been there, and the Von Erichs had a great feud, and they had one-man gang, and Gary Hart, and Scott Casey, and Kabuki, and Rip Oliver, and them, and Sunshine, but they had the great production thing. I mean, you could hear guys talking in the ring. I mean, not calling high spots, but then you could hear the action of the crowd, and the big microphones was there, you know, in our faces while we were wrestling, I remember. And the camera shots were great. It's just like today. I don't know if you guys have noticed or not, but I've told everybody, if you watch the WWE Raw, when the guy gets hit, the camera shakes. And I don't know why TNA or the rest of these companies didn't pick that up, or a guy gets slammed, it moves up and down. I mean, so the punches and stuff might not look that solid, because my kids went to a Raw in Charlotte and said, Dad, the stuff didn't look as good. But the camera, right. I said, son, the reason why is you're watching it straight on, the camera ain't shaking. Watch it. I mean, I point that out to people, and people say, well, I never really noticed that before. But I said, if you'll take time to look at that, you'll realize exactly what's going on. The production is everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's how it's presented. And the world-class TV was, back then, was head and shoulders, I think, above everybody. And the Von Erichs was a strong family. And Fritz Von Erich was, you know, each territory, we got to keep in mind, as Bill Watts was to the Louisiana territory, the Von Erichs was to that territory, as Jackie Fargo, Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, and Jerry Jarrett was the Memphis territory, as the Charlotte territory, Johnny Weaver and guys like that was big, and Bruno Sammartino, of course, in New York, and the Sheik and Bobo Brazil in Detroit, and Vern Gagnon. Each territory had its main big stars, and then they fed those stars a steady diet of great competitors. So with that in mind, the Von Erichs was nationwide, and I think as a family, although it was tragic what happened to them, and I really feel for Kevin Von Erich. Like you said, at one time he was a brother, but now he's not even a brother. It's got to be painful, you know. And I feel for him.
Have you heard that two of his sons are actually wrestling now?
Oh, yeah. I've seen them on the Internet wrestling. I've seen them on the Internet and everything. I think it's kind of funny that he had them, that they're wrestling, but I guess they do a great job and everything. You know, he lives in Hawaii, and I've spoke to him a couple times on the telephone, and he's doing really good over there. And of course, the sons are athletes. You know, that is one thing about Terry and Kevin. They were great athletes and everything. So with that being said, the sons look great, man, and I'm happy for them. I hope they do real well.
Craig, go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, you just talked about your sons going and seeing wrestling live and about making everything kind of look phony, which made me think about Bobby Eaton. Possibly one of the best punchers in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on Bobby Eaton? Awesome guy in the ring, barely touch you. I mean,
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, if you listen to Jim Cornette's interview, he'll tell you that about myself. So
oh, cool.
The thing of it was that Bobby Eaton had a great punch. You see,
yeah.
As a professional wrestler, and I'm not saying as a worker, as a professional wrestler, you got to keep in mind that the people can see and hear, but they cannot feel.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And the art of professional wrestling is to make it look real. You see,
mm-hmm.
a lot of guys go in there trying to convince the people that it's not on the up and up, where I think when you kick a guy, you should make it look like it kicks, make it look like you kicked his head off without actually doing it. That's the order.
That's right.
So when I kick somebody, then their reaction has to be to the kick. But if they're sitting there chewing a piece of chewing gum and not even making a face, then it makes my kick null and void, more or less, or my punch,
right.
or whatever that is. So for every great kick or punch thrown, there has to be someone on the receiving end that's able to sell that particular move to make it look great. And Bobby Eaton was a great is a great guy, and we all need to anybody that prays needs to be praying for Bobby Eaton. He's not in the best of health.
Yeah.
And and he's having a rough time, you see. And but as far as a great athlete, he was a natural. And as a matter of fact, there was Terry Bam Bam Gordy, the late Terry Bam Bam Gordy. He was 12 or 13 years old. As a matter of fact, you can see his match on YouTube. He was Terry Mecca, and he's wrestling Ernie the Big Cat Ladd. And Terry Mecca is about 13. He's about 6'3". He's got blonde hair. Check it out, guys. And it's actually Terry Bam Bam Gordy. And he was a great natural. To me, that's the – I can go to any place. Say, for example, if you guys was to call me today and said, Bobby, could you come wrestle for us next week in whatever city you want to go? And you said, you're going to wrestle against that guy over there. Well, then I would tell that guy, first of all, I would say, get up here and lock up with me. And when he stands and lock up with me in the dressing room, I can tell you if he can wrestle, I can tell you if he can't. I can tell you if we're going to have a great match or if we're not. And it's just from that simple thing. So the idea of the wrestling is to make it look right and real. But you see, with the guys in the WWE, and I'm not picking on them, and I'm saying that because they're really the last major organization left. And they're a TV business, I'd say, probably. And the thing of it is, Their focus is more on the production end of it. And you got to remember that there's a certain amount of guys training them, so it ain't like years ago where Reuben Kane, who is Robert Gibson, was trained by his brother and somebody else. So he had a style of his own. And Bobby Eaton was trained by a couple of guys and himself. He had a style of his own. Now when you got six major trainers training everybody, guess what, guys? Everybody's basically going to be wrestling the same. It's going to be like the those robots years ago. They were called the Stepford Wives, but it's the Stepford wrestlers. You know, there's nothing against the wrestlers, mind you. And today's wrestling's not exactly like we were wrestling because we were trying to pack the buildings. And I guess that's the case now, but Vince is now the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. When you go to the Ringling Brothers, you don't hear it's going to be Charles, the man on the flying trapeze. There will be a trapeze act, but you don't know who's going to be doing it. It's going to be Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. And there might be one major act that's advertised, if it's a giant elephant or who it might be, or the man getting shot out of the cannon. And it's the same with the WWE. They have a couple of focus stars, and I really believe in my heart of hearts, they don't want anything happening with Daniel Bryan. He's not their ideal of a wrestler. I think they did, and then when they put him in there with the with that family, I thought it was to kill them all and to hurt them. But, and maybe if not, then that was some great booking. I would call it booking, not writing. He's over, man, big time. As a matter of fact, somebody said Batista got in trouble because he flipped off the crowd because they were cheering Daniel Bryan. It's just the way it is, man. Look here, guys. When a guy gets over like Daniel Bryan, there's no stopping him. I mean, the office can do whatever they want, but that's one of the – okay, it's like Stone Cold Steve Austin in the 90s somewhere. I can't remember. He got over strong. People was wearing Austin 316 shirts going down the street. I mean, I could walk down any street or go to any mall, and I could see a couple of those. And Daniel Bryant's over like Steve Austin was, and I don't think Vince likes – I don't think they like that. They like the ideal of the brand being over and not the wrestling stars being over. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, the thing with Daniel Bryan is it's like the more they try to hurt him or bring him down, it just has the opposite effect with the fans. It's like the fans get more behind him, and hopefully sooner or later they'll see it like they did with like Eddie Guerrero and go for it. I mean, because I think he could be one of the biggest stars ever if they really give him the chance.
Do you know why the people like him?
Because he's good.
Do you? And I'll ask you again. Do you know why the people like him?
They can relate to him.
Do you know why the people like him?
All the above.
You're gonna have
Give me another example.
He's a great wrestler. Fiery babyface that you want to get behind. Because two guys fighting, and the small guy starts beating the big guy, starts kicking the big guy's ass. It's kind of something where you see it and you're like, wow, and you kind of get behind that guy.
Guess what, guys? He's the underdog.
Yes.
He's the underdog. He's the person that the people put their hope and faith in that he'll be able to do it. And the thing about Daniel Bryan is he's got explosive comebacks. And like when he throws the guy in the corner, he goes running. He gives him the drop kick in the corner, does it again. He throws him out of the ring. He dives through the ropes on him. That's an explosive comeback.
Right.
He's the underdog that the people can identify with in their life. And see, that's what's always been the attraction with wrestling, is someone to say, man, I heard like Steve Austin, everybody wanted to grab their boss, Vince McMahon, and that wasn't their boss, but they could put their face on Vince McMahon and say, man, I'd like to stick my middle finger up, although I'm a Christian and don't like that, but I'm just saying, they want to do that. They want to cuss him up one side and down the other. They want to put crap all over him. They want Daniel Bryan to win because he's the underdog in this life. 99% of us are the underdog. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're fighting from the bottom up, and that's why they like Daniel Bryan. And you're exactly right. The more Triple H and them don't like him, the more they do to him. Now, they can kill him off. You know how they can kill him off? Just don't put him on TV anymore. Take him off. Just like they did on the Royal Rumble, and the people knew they were getting ripped off when the last two or three guys was called out. And then all of a sudden you bring back Batista. And, man, Batista, in his face before he grew that hair, I thought, man, I hate to say this because I've never met him, but I said, man, that looks like Uncle Fester on steroids from the Addams Family. He had a round face. He didn't have that chiseled face like before, and I thought, what in the world? Go back and look at the pictures. He had a round face on him, man, and I thought, man, he's juiced up from the neck down, and from the neck up, he looked like they went and found Uncle Fester and dug him up and stuck his head on Batista. And then he bought his pants three sizes too small, and his shirt three sizes too small. And, man, Ray Charles and myself with eyes that's going bad could see through all that stuff. You understand what I'm saying, guys?
Yeah.
And that's what the company wanted. That's what the company wanted. But, man, listen here, guys, with the Internet and with guys like you and your radio shows and stuff like that, the people are smarter now than ever before, and you can only fool them so much. Listen, guys. If they can take Egypt, Internet, and turn that country upside down, imagine what wrestling fans could do with the wrestling business if they really wanted to shake it up. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that segues me to this. Here I am. I'm going to be featured on WWE New Network, right? I've been featured on their direct television stuff. And I've called the WWE a couple of times. I would like to have a Legends contract. They could sell my dolls. If I'm good enough to put on this Mid-South tape that I'm sitting outside of Walmart right now, and if I'm good enough to be sold on that tape, if I'm good enough to be on that world-class tape, why ain't I good enough to give me some money?
That's right.
I mean, because when I did the world-class tape, I knew that at the Sportatorium on Friday night, I was going to get my payday, or I was going to be at the Reunion Arena on Christmas night and get my payday. But why is it not that Vince McMahon is reaching out to guys like me and all the others and saying, guys, here's a little something. because of what you did back then. You see, I never signed a release to Vince McMahon, and I have people every day ask me, do you guys get residuals? No, we don't. Not any of us. There's been a couple guys tried to sue, but I'm telling you right now, guys, it's not right. And I'm not crying over spilt milk. It's something serious that we laid our bodies on the line for. But wouldn't it be nice if Bobby Eaton got a check in the mail from Vince McMahon?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or wouldn't it be nice if Abdullah the Butcher got a check in the mail from Vince McMahon for featuring his stuff? And not only that, some of the greatest stars in wrestling, Ivan the Russian Bear Koloff, would get a check in the mail. Because, listen, Vince now has this wrestling for all this product, but he wouldn't have had it if we wasn't out there in the highways, in the hedges, doing those wrestling shows. He wouldn't have that now. And you think that they're worth billions before this or millions? They're going to be worth billions when it's all said and done on the broken backs of guys from the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, the 40s. And I guarantee you, if the people on the Internet, and I'm 53 years old and I barely get on it, but if there would be such a rumble and a ruckus over this that Vince McMahon would have to start paying people residuals for this money, because, look, guys, he stole our intellectual work. People didn't tell us what to do in the ring. People didn't tell us what to say on the interview. We knew what direction that the thing was going in, but they didn't have to give us a script. We had a booker, but we didn't have to have a writer. Therefore, it's just like on the Mid-South tape, superstar Bill Dundee was not given credit whatsoever. He turned Bill Watts' territory around. They broke records with the booking that Bill Dundee did there in Bill Watts' territory. Now, here's the thing, and I just want to say this, that I wish that young people would look at this wrestling like we're talking about, Mid-South wrestling, world-class wrestling, isn't it? It's fine Kevin Von Erich sold the tapes, but look, he had the tapes because we were told on Friday night we would be in San Antonio, Texas, and we did that match because we were going to make money there. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we didn't give exclusive rights forever and a day that you could use this. We felt like that, hey, and don't think that I'm crying over sour grapes or mad or anything about that, but the thing of it is, when we worked, we realized that there would be a payday coming. But with Vince McMahon, he's just exploiting us to the fact that he's not going to give us a dime. And I want my due right, not only for me, but I want it for every wrestler, every announcer, every referee. It's only more than right. Don't you think, fellas?
Oh, I totally agree with you. I'm actually shocked that you're not getting a check from the DVDs. I thought that whoever came on them would get them, but, I mean, that's just a shock to me, and I hope that changes. And
you see, here's the thing. We're featured on that Mid-South tape, and it looks like if you watch that Mid-South DVD, Jim Cornette's talking about Ric Flair and a traveling in the Mid-South area, which Jim Cornette said he did that in 2005. They just came down and taped a bunch of stuff. Now, with that being said, it's me and Tommy Rogers in that video traveling, and it looks like a home video. I don't even know how they got that. And me and Tommy Rogers were getting out of a car. But do you think Vince McMahon, and I'm just going to call him out and say it, or Triple H or Stephanie and them would have the whatevers? Because I'm telling you right now, they want to use this older product to try to get people to like the new product, I think was the word they said, wasn't it? Vince McMahon and them saying they're hoping that they can take the old product and so that the people will get to like the new product, because, guys, my kids, when they went to Charlotte, only half the arena was full. And it's like that around a lot of places, people tell me, where they black it out and lay blankets, curtains down and stuff like that. My thing is, man, you'd want to fill the arenas up because then you could sell more merchandise and get more people to like your product and have a high viewing rating, you know, on your Raws and stuff like that. So, sure. With that being said, I'm not mad at Vince McMahon and them. I'm not mad at Triple H. I'm not mad at Stephanie McMahon. I'm not mad at anybody. I'm just saying, man, I worked hard for those matches that you're showing, and I always expected a payday out of it. And it's
sure.
no different today in 2014 for the matches that I had all throughout the 80s, as you guys said at the beginning. And they could market us, and they could make dolls of us, figures, and they could sell them just like they did with a lot of the other tag teams and stuff like that. And I believe there would be a market for it. And I'm
Agreed.
Not saying that we're anybody. And I know the conversation turned to this, but it's the hard, cold, hard facts. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And not
Absolutely.
Only were we blessed to wrestle in the United States, but we got a chance to wrestle a lot of great matches in Japan, you know, against a lot of great teams over there and had a ball. And we got a chance to go to, like I said, Israel and Australia and places like that. So I'm very blessed with the career. Look, my kids said, Dad, you like Daniel Bryan. And you know why they say I like Daniel Bryan?
Because he reminds you them of you?
Yes, he does. He's a guy 5'9", 5'10", 200 pounds. The same thing. I remember we would wrestle against guys and, you know, and the good thing about it was, man, we could have a match with anybody, no matter if they were our size or 6'6". If they wanted to work with us, we could have a great match with them. And Daniel Bryan's that same type of guy. And maybe there was a guy in Japan called Kikuchi. And I don't know how to say his first name, but if you go on the YouTube and look at the match with Joe Malenko and Kikuchi against Tommy and myself, which was a very proud match for me, he was a guy that was an underdog and the people loved him. And see, that is exactly like Daniel Bryan today. And maybe if they keep him fighting up, the people will get behind him more. But the minute he begins the top, gets to the top, guess what, guys? The chase is over.
Right.
Now,
you understand,
Bobby,
what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Now, Bobby, you've been with us for quite a while. I'd like to let everyone get one last question, and we'll wrap up for the night. So,
yeah.
Couture, go ahead and ask your last question.
Yeah, you talked about working with Bobby and Dennis at the Midnight Express. How'd you enjoy working when there was Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton? Because I remember, that first Clash of the Champions, y'all had one of the best brawls I've ever seen on that show. And what do you remember about those matches?
I'll tell you what, Sweet Stan Lane was part of the Fabulous Ones, part of the Midnight Express. He was a great competitor, a great wrestler. Him and Bobby jailed. You know, that's the thing about it. Dennis Condrey brought something to the team that also Stan Lane brought another level to the team. Not that it was necessarily a better team. I think they were both exactly the same, but they just both brought it. And that was the great thing about it, that we could wrestle against Bobby and Dennis, or we could wrestle against Stan and Bobby and have great matches with them. They all were. Both sets of teams were great. I couldn't say that one was better than the other, you know, as far as that goes. But the match there, Clash of the Champions, was a – as a matter of fact, for those that don't know it, that Clash of the Champions hurt WrestleMania that year.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, Jim Crockett and him got in trouble for giving a free show away that hurt the buy rate of the WrestleMania. But
yes.
That was a phenomenal match. It was very physical. And like I said, it's great when you wrestle against somebody that you enjoy wrestling with, that you can trust to give your body to, that they're not going to hurt you. But in that match, Tommy busted his septum. He had a lot of – he got hurt a lot. And it was very – they were great matches, but they were very physical matches, you know. Concerning the teams, Stan and Bobby was great, but Dennis and Bobby was great also.
Craig, go ahead and ask your last question.
You have any? You mentioned one match coming up. Do you have anything else coming up on your schedule, or any speaking engagements? Any preaching?
I think my website is bobbyfulton.com. I don't know for sure. FantasticBobbyFulton.com. My friend Rich Jones does that for me. But also, I'm on Facebook as the Bobby Fulton. I think coming matches in Ohio. in Mason, Ohio on February 21st. Also February the 8th, this Saturday night, me and the Honky Tonk Man's going to be wild and loud and unpredictable at the Convention Center in Columbus, Ohio, tomorrow night. Also, I'm going to be at the Mid-South Legends Fan Fest. It's that WrestleMania weekend down there. I'm sure that people can go to Mid-South LegendsFanFest.com or go to my website and get some more information about that. Bill Watts is going to be there. Bill Dundee's going to be there. Luke Williams, Bobby Eaton. I think Bobby Eaton may be there. The Rock and Roll Express, Jim Cornette. But I'm still doing stuff, and I'm enjoying it. And, guys, I appreciate you letting me have a chance to talk to you all. I'm still very passionate about professional wrestling. My kids love it, Dylan and Jaron. And as a matter of fact, I'm just thankful for the opportunity to speak to you all tonight. And I'm still kicking, alive and kicking. And as a matter of fact, we didn't touch on this, but I'm having some eye issues where I've had a stroke in my right eye. And this left me, well, I was totally blind in my right eye, but now I can see barely. And we're doing a fundraising thing right now on my website and through Indigo.com, I think. Rich Jones helping me with people donating and getting some perks, T-shirts and pictures and stuff like that. And then I was told that I've got, I thought I had one good eye, but I've got hardening of the arteries in that eye. So where I'm in great condition everywhere, my eyes are giving me a fit. So, like I said, there's prayer changes things, and I have a deep faith with the Lord Jesus Christ. And like I said, here I am 53, and 6 months ago I was saying, man, concerning everybody else's body shot, and I still feel great. And then I get this, diagnosis, which is kind of a downer. But I'm hoping through procedures and things that I can get my sight straightened out. 53 is young, and, they can, I hate to say it like this, but they can replace shoulders and elbows, but it's hard to replace your eyes.
Sure.
And not being on a down note, guys, let's keep it up, man. I talked to you guys for an hour, about an hour and a half. Why? Because I enjoy talking to you and because I love the wrestling business. And I'm very passionate about it. And that's been since I was 4 years old. And here I am 53 and still got a fire for it. And I'm pulling for the WWE. Don't get me wrong. I want the wrestling business to survive. And the late Jackie Fargo, the fabulous one Jackie Fargo, told me this. He said, Bobby, they can never kill professional wrestling. And if you think about what's been done to wrestling, if it was been done to football, baseball, basketball, or any other sport, it would have been dead in its tracks. But wrestling is alive. And it's being featured in different little towns and cities throughout this world. And it's still alive today. And with guys like you, you help keep it alive. And God bless you guys on your broadcast, how you send this out. And you guys keep in touch with me. And I wish you nothing but the best.
Same to you.
Same to you.
God bless you all.
Thank you. God bless. Yeah, Bobby, before we let you go, I just want to say it's truly an honor to have spoken with you today. I like to say I've been following you for like over 30 years, I think. And like I say, one of the greatest tag teams of all time. You guys have the greatest ring gear of all time. I love the outfits; they were just so awesome. And like I say, it's truly an honor. And we want to wish you the best and all the best with your eyes. And hope everything works out. And we'll definitely keep in touch because we actually could ask probably a million more questions, but we don't want to take all of your time tonight.
Fine. You guys keep in touch. Let's do it again. God bless you. I know the time is running about, and I wish you the best.
So thank you very much, Bobby, and you have a very good night.
Thank you, and God bless you guys, too. Thank you. It's been a privilege and a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Cool.
We got 30 seconds, so let me try and draw the plugs real quick. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the Stream Our Show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows. You can also download the Stream Our Show at BlogTalkRadio.com/Cotrere and older shows at BlogTalkRadio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo, and you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. Go ahead, Craig.
Just check me out on Twitter. That's Proper Jam, P-R-O-P-E-R-J-A-M. Everything wrestling and music related, you can hit me up there.
You can get me out on Twitter at Couture35 and go to youtube.com/Couture. I got a YouTube channel up there with a bunch of playlists. I just put up some WWF house shows from the 80s, from like Madison Square Garden, Boston Garden. Actually, if you go, there's a section on World Class, and if you go there, I've put up the Christmas Day Star Wars from 1985 up there. I just found the other day. So if anybody wants to go check that out, you check that out.
Cool. So now before we go, Craig, do you have anything you want to talk about before we go?
Not really. I dropped the news while you were calling Bobby. Just check me out. Starting in 2 weeks, I'll be on with Brian and Vinny. It'll be the Brian, Vinny, and Craig show every Tuesday night on F4WOnline.com. I'm humbled that he asked me to be on the show.
And I hope they don't
need how to get to the site, because I'm kind of dumb as a box of rocks.
Serious.
Well, hopefully this will lead to over-the-top radio getting on the site here.
One step at a time, brother. One step
we
at
can
a
hold
time.
The little midget down at WrestleMania and just beat him up until he agrees to it, you know? That might be the easiest way. But we could maybe be diplomatic about it. We'll see. But
that's
sure,
probably the best
way. Do you have anything... Did you have anything you want to talk about before we go?
Well, I was talking to Craig when we had lost Bobby, while you were kind of calling him back, I was talking about the Super Bowl, because I'm not a football fan, but if I was last Sunday, I'd been pissed off because the power went out here about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, didn't come home back home until 1 o'clock in the morning. We had, like, a big ice storm, and power was down, and I just crawled up back in my bed with a couple of blankets and turned on the gas heater. I just went back to bed.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm glad I wasn't a football fan or anything. I've been pissed off.
Yeah.
I actually wasted a sick day to watch that Super Bowl. And, I can really care less about either team, but, you know, when it's like that and one team's getting so much more of a push or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You kind of want to root for the other guy, so I was kind of going for Denver, and Denver just the first freaking play they screwed everything up. I mean, it was just a rough Super Bowl, and the commercials actually weren't even that great. The Radio Shack probably had the best.
Radio Shack was awesome.
Budweiser had the Siri commercial they have every year, which is awesome. What else was good?
The one Doritos commercial with the kid and the dog and the lasso, and I thought that was tremendous.
Yeah, that was okay. The Coke commercial was cool as shit. The one that's getting all the controversy. What was funny is because people were reposting stuff on Twitter, and you had all these idiots who were upset. Like, how can you sing the national anthem in a different language? And
yeah.
It's like, when the hell did America the Beautiful become the national anthem?
The one that I thought was tremendous that didn't get a lot of play, I shouldn't say it was tremendous, but it made me laugh. The John Stamos yogurt commercial was awful funny.
On the Radio Shack commercial, I popped for Boobo the Mechanical Owl from Clash of the Titans. You know, man.
That
was tremendous.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question. Okay, there weren't a lot of girls. You know, of course, Mary Lou Retton was one of the big stars, but there was another girl. Who was the other girl? Was that Kelly LeBrock or somebody?
Yeah, I'm not sure, man. I'd have to see it again.
One of the Go-Go's?
Maybe.
I don't know.
She looked like she was from the 80s, but I just couldn't. I didn't get a close enough look to tell exactly who it was. But I've been kind of like keeping my eye out on the Winter Olympics ceremony that's been on TV, and I love the opening ceremonies of both Olympics because, my God, do you get to see some beautiful women from like all over the world and just different looks? I mean, it's just incredible.
I really watch porn.
But anyway, I thought the interview went great. That's 2 weeks in a row we had two incredible interviews that could have gone on a lot longer. And
I was going to come in last week, but you were on a roll, so, and I wasn't going to add anything to what you were saying, so I just let you have it.
I'm going to see if getting Rudy back on for maybe next week or the week after just to finish up, because there were a few more things I wanted to get with, and he was a really good guest.
I needed to get this out here as soon as possible. As some of you, and you guys, I don't know if you guys know, but my daughter's getting married next week. And my daughter's getting married next week.
That's your old
married. Yeah. Anyway, she's getting married next Saturday, and so I have a rehearsal dinner on Friday night. So if you want to get him back on next week, I won't be here, or we need to move the show. One or the other.
We'll discuss that during the week. And
yeah,
that's actually pretty cool about your daughter. I'll never forget. Was it a Christmas show where they Brian and Vinnie Mason kind of joked and you hung up on them?
Yes,
I remember that.
I know it was years ago, but Vinnie had a, I can only describe it as a lustful eye for my daughter Danielle, and I had to watch him like a hawk. And Brent as well. Brent was in my home one time.
Well, Brent was.
Yeah, that's true. And time was the last time.
There was actually an opportunity where Craig could have allowed me to stay at his house, but
I guess for that reason,
he banished me to Jimmy's house.
Well, that was the other reason.
Is Brent coming to the wedding?
I'm sorry?
Is Brent coming to the wedding?
No, Brent is not coming to the wedding. Brian will be in Hawaii, but Vince and his new almost bride will be there. And
didn't Brian just go to Hawaii?
What's that?
Not too long ago.
I swear it was only like a couple months ago he went to Hawaii.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, and then he broke kayfabe and mentioned that not only has he been going to Hawaii a lot, his wife's paying for the trip.
Oh, no wonder.
I don't know exactly what's up with that, but I know it's a write-off, basically, for her foundation. So good for her.
Maybe you should have said that.
Do it. You can do it. You just do it. I mean, why not?
Oh yeah, I need to go to her and tell her that if she really wants to have fun, she needs to leave Brian at home and take me, and I'll go parasailing and scuba diving and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, I'm sure
to see you in the parasail.
Hey, I'm just throwing it out there, but I bet you Brian looks better in his underpants than you do. Just saying.
I'd be in the boat and we'd have another beefcake thing. Egg come in with his knees at that 45 miles an hour and kill me.
Yeah, unfortunately, that would probably happen. But we'll go ahead and wrap up the show. So, yeah, everybody come back next week, and we'll have something for everyone next week.
That's right.
So be the man! You gotta beat the man! Found out how good you are, you're looking at the I just whipped your ass.
until I wear your Texas ass out.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.